providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. I hope you all enjoyed those first two segments with Doc and, well, his more positive outlook for gold and even for the underlying precious metal stocks. We are now chatting with Brian London, editor of the Gold Newsletter, also our host down at the New Orleans Investment Conference. Brian, let's continue this focus on the precious metals, but a bit more on the underlying stocks, because I'm sure a lot of people listening to this have a portfolio of precious metal stocks, and they're probably very happy with the way some of these stocks have moved over the last maybe 4 or 5 months. Hopefully they haven't been holding them for 2 or 3 years, but there's probably still a handful of these stocks that just haven't really moved. Maybe you could say they're building a bigger base, but the fact of the matter is they're trending still kind of around their general lows of this last 52 weeks. Brian, what have you noticed in terms of the stocks that have started moving early on here, if we want to say that this is an early on move for precious metal stocks?
Yeah, thank you, Corey. These stocks have moved over, everything's moved over the past, you know, week or so, and really even during this rally going back to the beginning of November. But they're still incredibly cheap. I saw some statistic the other day that was saying that mining stocks, the producers, are as cheap relative to gold as they were back in 2015, which was a record as far as cheapness, you know, relative to the gold price. And we're back, we're still at those levels. So even though a number of the juniors have moved 20, 30, 50% or more, if you look at the long term in where this kind of market would be going, they're still remarkably cheap. As to what's been moving, it's kind of what you would expect. It's been companies that have large established resources or appear to be building those resources of good management teams. You know, the cream rises to the top first initially. I like Vizsla Silver. I think it's doing well. It's building on its established resource. It's obviously going to get bigger. Other companies, you know, out there that are moving are things like Gold Basin Resources is a company I like that unfortunately is moving well because it looks like, although it doesn't have a resource right now, it looks like it's on the way to building a substantial resource. And it kind of aggravates me because I haven't bought it yet personally. And it's been moving past our recommended level, our entry point in Gold Newsletter. So, yeah, generally speaking, the companies that have something that they can show the market in terms of resources, real value for gold and silver in the ground, are benefiting more directly and initially from this surge in the metals prices.
Yeah, Brian, that's kind of what we'd expect, too, just because if somebody has proof in the pudding and they've got a resource estimate or they've got an economic study, they're going to get immediate leverage to rising prices, where maybe an earlier stage company that doesn't have anything proven in the ground yet is a little bit more speculative and not as tied to the metals price. But I guess one question I have is, when you think about that first statement you made that we're seeing valuations in producers almost where they were in 2015, it's a little shocking because if people remember, 2015 is when gold made its low around 2050. Around 1050 at the end of that year. And now we're at over $2,000 gold price. You would expect producers to be doing, I guess, a lot better than they have, especially the valuations. Is it really a story that the inflation has stolen the candy from the table, and that because the higher input costs they have, that's why they're not getting valued like they were in the past?
No, I don't think so, because the companies have really cleaned up their operations. Their margins are hefty, typically around 50% or thereabouts. So they're minting money almost literally hand over fist. They've got lots of money. They should be rewarded for that. I think more specifically, you know, it used to be in the old days that if you wanted to leverage the moves in the metals, you simply bought the mining stocks and it happened for you. There are a lot more options these days, a lot more competitors to anyone wanting to leverage these moves. For one, you can trade on margin. Another, they have the 2 or 3x leveraged ETFs out there. So you can play the mining stock industry through a lot of other means and leverage your positions to the metals through other means. And so I think for sophisticated traders and hedge funds and the like, they tend to prefer or at least have some positions in these other options to the mining stocks themselves. I think and I hope as this market develops, you'll see more generalist money come into the mining stocks because, you know, as I've said many times, it is not an efficient market, and you can significantly improve your returns over not just the metals themselves, but other investors in the mining space if you're just willing to put in a little bit more work in research and time and effort. So I think it will start to make up that gap. But right now, I don't think it's a matter of higher production or higher cost inputs, because most of the inputs that are relevant right now are in the construction area. Energy costs, while higher today than they were a week ago, still aren't that at that point where they really crimp margins for the mining stocks, for the mining producers.
So, Brian, as you are seeing some of these stocks move higher, and again, it hasn't been necessarily a broad-based recovery, but we are seeing more and more stocks take part. Are you chasing them? Are you focused on the stocks that are moving, that are getting some more market love?
To some degree, I think, again, they're still cheap. And while, you know, when gold goes up $35, that may not be the time to buy, but, you know, wait a few days at least kind of a thing. I try to point out to people that these levels are still small fractions of where the stocks will be or where they'll be trading in a really euphoric bull market atmosphere, the kind of atmosphere that I think is coming up. Personally, I'm not chasing much or anything right now because I've been buying pretty heavily over the past few months, really over the past 6 months, and are pretty much fully invested at this point. What I need to do personally, you know, do some turning over of the soil and the garden and sell some things to redeploy. But short of that, yeah, I still think it's a good, generally speaking, it's a good buying opportunity around these levels.
Well, Brian, you mentioned that some of the stocks that seem to be moving the most, and I would echo the statement, are the ones that have resources in the ground that are getting that initial move on the higher metals prices. But when we think about how these stocks were valued for ounces in the ground in prior periods, it's almost comical where the ounces in the ground are being valued today. Do you see that as being an optionality factor in some of these companies that maybe have big resources? They've spent years drilling them out and doing drill program after drill program after drill program. Maybe they got 1 million, 2 million, 4 million ounces of gold, some even more than that, but they're still being valued like they have 500,000 ounces. So is the optionality in resources in the ground to maybe getting revalued one of the theses you're looking at?
Yeah, it really is. You know, I think a perfect company fitting that criteria would be Banyan Gold. It's a company that I frankly felt like I missed out on the discovery play. And talking to management, I realized that, you know, they're not valued anywhere near where they should be for those ounces in the ground, for the management team, and for a very significant increase in those resources that I see ahead. So yeah, that's one of those kinds of companies where you play that optionality that the market is going to have to recognize these resources at some point. And as that euphoria kicks in, they will become more fairly valued, if not overshot and overvalued at some point.
Brian, what do you think about some of these stocks that have resources? I just went through a long list of stocks that I have on my watch list that have resources, but actually haven't really moved. They're not even close to 52-week highs. Some of them are still at almost 52-week lows, but again, they do have resources. Is that the market telling us something?
Well, I think it's the market's inattention and an example of its inefficiency. An inefficiency that isn't just, well, sometimes you'll find a hidden gem that isn't valued according to its peer group or has some other factor that will accelerate its value in the near future that still remains underappreciated, but that the whole sector has yet to wake up. That's a broader inefficiency that, you know, it should be worth much more And if we add another $100 to the share price, I mean, to the gold price over the next few months, which I think is a very real possibility, if not likelihood, then you're going to see these things really wake up. FOMO does not take long to kick in when it does kick in. And as more money is made in the sector, more money gets deployed in the sector. You know, it is very circular, very incestuous. If you go to any of the, these big mining shows and look down the aisles, you'll see that most of the people down that aisle are actually in the industry. And everybody invests in each other's plays, et cetera, et cetera. So we don't really have that generous input. We don't have that excitement coming in, that money coming in from investors that aren't that already heavily invested in the sector. The retail, even through the family office levels. And I think that's going to come. We're seeing an awakening globally to the fundamentals for gold, in that all the investment markets are looking ahead for what the Fed is going to do later this year, which is very likely, considering all the factors out there, that something breaking in the financial system, the oncoming recession, the cost of servicing the federal debt. All of these factors will eventually force the Fed to not only pause, but pivot. And when that happens, you really want to be in the metals and associated investments, because inflation is going to remain stubbornly high, persistently high. So we will continue to have money flow out of stocks and bonds toward the metals. That's already starting to happen right now. That's one of the factors that was primarily behind the latest surge in the metals. And I think that's only going to accelerate in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, Brian, it's going to be nice to see more of that generalist capital wake up. And there has been more media coverage of the gold space over the last month or so, especially after the banking crisis. We have seen more of a focus on it. But just circling back again to some of the mining stocks, which a lot of people listening are positioned in, you know, when you think about the resources in the ground, we should also make the point that not all resources are created the same. There's different recovery rates. They could be oxide. They could be sulfides. They may need a lot of capex to get their project built and developed. And that could be an overhang, that, you know, kind of the financing risk. There's also the jurisdiction. What are you putting the most weight on when you're looking at these? Because a million ounces in the ground versus another company with a million ounces in the ground may be a completely different story when you dig under the hood.
Yeah, it's very complicated. And that gets back to that inefficiency that I was talking about. You can't just compare apples and apples. It's a big old fruit basket. And every story has its individual characteristics and things you need to take mind of. And it's very hard, if not impossible, to generalize about these things. If a deposit or a project doesn't have one of the top two or three management teams in the industry, well, it has to compensate for that by being that much more special. By the same token, if you have a really top management team that has a reputation on the line with every company they're involved in, you don't need as good of a project, or at least you know that if that project, that exploration play doesn't work, they're going to find something to work in that vehicle because their reputation is on the line. So it's a mixed bag. There's not really a consistent thread throughout all of this. Of course, beyond the management issue, which is something you always need to place first and foremost in your analysis of any junior mining company, there's just a lot to consider. Every project, the geometry, the geology, cost of production, the regime that it's in, it all comes together and it all has to add up to something that represents an opportunity after you weigh all of the individual factors.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing I think that we keep coming back to too is if we're in a bull market, well, that can even lift some of the crappiest projects too, right? And that's what I think a lot of people are wondering. Is this going to be a bit more of a long run bull market rather than more of a select shorter term run? At least right now, we are seeing more stocks and some of the more high quality ones get interest but there's still a long way to go for a lot of these stocks to get to their highs of just a couple years ago. Brian, thanks for your time, buddy. It's great chatting with you. Always fun hearing what you're seeing in this sector because, well, you're in it every day and you're talking to a lot of companies. So we'll chat with you in another couple weeks. Thanks again for your time on this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Great. You too, guys. Thanks so much.